Welcome, everybody, to Cycle Jerks Podcast, episode 106. We're here. I'm Mike Stewart, and I've got my co-host Dave Dalton here in Northern California, and we are very excited to have someone that we're calling the Incredible Marie, Marie Soleil Blay, joining us, fresh off her Tour Divide race experience, and what an experience it was. Marie, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. So cool.
Yeah. Exciting. Yeah. Exciting is an understatement for sure. This has got, so I don't know about Marie. I don't know what you, but we blocked out 3 hours. So you got to tell the whole time.
Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah, a lot happened out there. Hey, I was wondering, is Mira, the John and his dog, are they still on the course?
Oh, I, you know, that's a good question. They might be. I know that they had to pull from the race.
So.
Yeah.
Because you also had them on the podcast, had him on a podcast. And then I was like, I think he's not going to be on the podcast soon. I think he's still up there.
Yeah. Wait, time out. Mike, you said he pulled because Mira was injured. So you're saying, yeah. What do you mean still on the course?
Well, he took a break.
Oh, I think.
Yeah. They both took a break.
Oh, okay. I just kind of saw that he was still out there. I was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah.
He spends a
lot of time out there. And I think, I'm not totally sure, but I know that Mira was really ginger and she was in the basket a lot more. And that forced him to climb the hills and it aggravated his knee. So they had this little problem and then they just decided to pull the plug just to, you know, not to do more damage.
Damage, right.
Oh, yeah, but I did see that they were out there. I mean, just a few days ago, it looked like they were out there still.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you happen to see them and talk to John at all or?
No. Well, I kind of like blew my valve, like just before the start. I mean, yeah, I learned so much. the valve core with my, so I went to pump my tire just like the morning. And then, so anyway, I was struggling with my pump to, I got to the start, like kind of like just before the start.
Oh God.
And so I didn't get to, you know, just meet with people and stuff. And then I was like, I'm going to go, you know, like, I don't want to lose any minutes. So then I didn't.
Right. Well, we've mentioned it before, but it's worth repeating for those that didn't listen to the first episode or know anything about the Tour Divide. It is it's 4,000 K. Did I got that right?
4,300
kilometer bike race from Banff, Canada, down to the border of Mexico. And it's an incredible, challenging endeavor. And Marie did her first ever this year. So how did it go?
It went.
There's a segue.
No, it was really hard to wrap my head around like how it went, like to answer that question. Like at the end, I was feeling really happy, but then there's a lot of blurry moment because my brain was not there all the time. It's quite incredible how, and well, like, it's so long that like you have some good days, some not so good days, but then, so it's hard to have a final, you know, to put it together in, because there's so many pieces. It's really hard. I'm like, I don't know how to like summarize it because it was like a series of things, you know, but
right.
It went well. Like I didn't have any mechanical injuries, you know, I didn't crash. So I guess, and I wanted to be under 20 days, which I did it. So then, you know, it went well, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah. So our listeners can understand the blur because it's gotta be. So you said under 20 days, well, you did it in 19
days and 9 hours, I think is the official.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. People listening. People listening, get your head around that. 19 days straight on a bike, right?
Yeah. And you know what? I wanted to write the numbers and I forgot. I think the average would have been 138 miles per day average.
Yeah. And when you say 138 to like a roadie, they're like, oh, big deal. But we're talking about some of the most challenging
even
terrain.
On the road. Yeah. Like, well, even on the road, that would be big.
It would
like
be.
My biggest day on the road was 120 mile.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. I had never done this. You know, when we said, you know, on paper, this is impossible because, and we said, like, we don't, you don't prepare for a marathon by doing marathon. Like there's a buildup and then the race day is there to see the best that you can do. And then you can, and that's what I wanted to see. and you need to have a race because you can't do that by yourself. This is, and yeah, I was, so like the first day, 250K, that's, I don't know how many miles. Actually, probably more
I don't
than
have my phone. I can't do the conversion, so I don't know. But point, times 0.6.
It's a lot.
And, yeah.
And, you know, it's a lot.
The thing is,
it's more than the average because
I think we covered this too, but here we are making this comparison with roadies, right? So here we are all down here trying to get our bikes sub 16 pounds, if you will. How much did your bike with all the gear weigh?
I think it was under 50 pounds with the gear, but that was without food and water. So add another like 10, 15 pounds.
Okay.
Wow. Wow.
And in the beginning I was like, oh, I don't want to carry too much water. I mean, in the beginning there's a lot of water, but then as we progress through the route, there's not as much water. And then once you've run out of water once, you're like, no.
Never again. Yeah.
I'll just have another liter, you know, and then what's another liter? But like a liter, I think 1 liter is 1 kilo of weight.
Yeah.
So like, oh, I'll just have 2 liter extra. That's like, joke, you know?
Yeah. All
so
right.
You don't want to do too much, but then just the security of not having to worry about running out of food and water. So then I ended up having a lot more. Like in the beginning, I was like, oh, I'm going to calculate. But then your brain goes sleeping. Yeah. And then I made miscalculation. And so I was like, I'm too tired to make calculation. I'll just bring more. So,
right.
So you said you got to the start and this is like, go. Like tell me about the start. How many people are actually participating? Is it just one big mass start? And
it was kind of not confusing, but the emails kind of came in pretty much last minute. It's not like, you know, in road cycling, there's a race website. And then like, I think a month before we get the tech guide and then the direct, there's the start list, you know, everything is, you know,
everything.
Yeah. Totally. You just wait and I don't know. And then, so because this year, I think there was over 200 starter. And so we had an email asking us if we really wanted to race or if we were just there to tour. And so, and the email was like, are you really going to be under 30 days? And I read some people on Facebook being like, well, I made it all the way here. Like I want to race, but then I think also for the track leaders anyway. So that part was a little, not confusing, but you had to kind of confirm that you, and that was to help them kind of put people. So then we had to
waves, right?
Enter our kind of target finish days so that they can put us in sort of order. So they did like waves every 10 minutes.
Okay.
So I think it was maybe 10, 15 riders per wave every 10 minutes.
Okay.
So yeah.
Yeah.
And then I went in the wrong wave because I got too excited and I... It's funny. I was like, I thought it was third wave, but then I don't know. It started at 6:55 a.m. instead of 7. So I thought it was every 5 minutes. So at like 7:05, I thought it was a third wave. And anyway, and then I realized, oh, this is not the way I was supposed to start. Here we go. The roadie jumped to start and I went like 10 minutes early. But then anyway, then I sent them an email. I said, hey, I think I went in the wrong wave. I got too excited. And so I think they like readjusted.
I can imagine just lining up for an event like that and for something so massive and completely new. I mean, you had ridden it once before, but not raced it. And so I can imagine just being so keyed up and just raring to go. That's understandable. I would think I wouldn't think that's probably that unusual even.
Yeah. And it's so funny, like in insight, because like the first hour, like this is the most energetic hour of the next 3 weeks.
Yes.
Then it just goes like, and I was like, I don't want to lose any minute, but then like minutes,
like over the course of like, 19 days,
I thought it was silly that I was like hype. And then you're just a zombie. So then it was like, you know, it didn't matter. I feel it's funny to see how excited I was and then how that excitement didn't carry in terms of like, you know, focus and.
Right. Well, and I remember reading one of your posts where you said, I was thinking it was going to be a time trial, you know? So, you know, you understand after like, the first maybe day, like, oh, this is not really a time trial. This is a battle of attrition, right?
It's funny because it was nothing like I expected. And I was really surprised. It's like, I thought it was not even bikepacking, because bikepacking is being in nature, is finding a place to camp, is making coffee in the morning, it's looking at the landscape. Uh-huh. There was none of that. It was just go. And then on the other side, it was not racing either, because racing is like this high focus. You know, you're aware of everything, and you try to be efficient. You're like, I'm super aware of everything, but then you're so tired that it was like somewhere in the middle, but it was neither racing, neither bikepacking. And what I thought was going to be hard was actually not hard. And what I thought was challenging, I didn't expect. So it was a huge learning experience that I didn't expect that. Because I thought it was funny that I thought that I had experience in racing. I had ridden the course. So I thought I had like a decent, you know, build into it, or like decent kind of not background but tools, but I was completely new. I made so many mistakes. This was nothing like I ever done. The thing is, like, I thought it was going to be hard with the fatigue to want to keep going. Like, I was afraid that my mind would be like, oh, let's just go to sleep. But the competition, that was so easy. I'm so competitive. So it was really easy to, like, I just want to keep going. I just want to keep going. But then the execution, my mind, like, not my mind, but, like, I think the physical aspect of my brain was so tired. I feel like my brain was the one limiting me. Like, not the mind, but, like, trying to, okay, I need to calculate how much distance until the next resupply, how much food I need to get. And then what am I calculating? What am I? Get at a gas station, and then what am I getting? Like, you know, and then just kind of slow. And I mean, many miscalculation. I couldn't believe. I was like, how did I think this was going to be 2 hours? It's like 6 hours. It's like, oh, I totally. Right. And yeah, so like, and what I thought was going to be hard, I thought getting up in the morning was going to be hard, because I was like, how am I going to be able to cut sleep? Like, after 4 hours, I want to stay. But no, what was hard is I didn't want to go to bed because the girls were ahead of me. And so then I kept falling asleep. I kept like try to do these little naps. Oh, I'll just like sleep for 10 minutes and then, but then you get back on your bike and then, oh no, I need to sleep more. And every time I would wake up, I would get back on my bike, but then I needed more sleep. So then what was hard wasn't to want to keep going. It was like the discipline of, I need to rest. which in cycling, you never have to be like, oh, I should sleep 4 hours. Like, this never happens. You do time trial with 4 guys, you know?
Yeah,
right. I realized that this was a situation I had never faced before. And I totally, you know, didn't manage. I didn't have the discipline to stop properly. So it ended up being all over the place.
So what was a typical day of sleep for you?
You know, there was no typical. It went, so at day one, I thought, you know what? I'm going to do it smart. And I'm going to have good rest. Maybe I'm going to use hotel. And I wanted to be more conservative in the first few days and pick it up. I was like, people are going to get tired. I'm not going to get too excited.
Yeah.
And so the first day, I ended up getting a hotel in Fernie at 250K. So because I was like, we did Cocoa Pass, which was a big obstacle. And it was still like a PB for me. And I was like, but most of the girls went past that. But I was, you know, that's fine. I also got caught in the mud. So I thought I was going to be in Fernie by midnight. And I was running out of food. But then Fernie was right there. And then I got caught in the mud. So that took another 2 hours. And by then I was really bunked.
What do you mean caught in the mud?
The first day was like rain on and off. And I mean, like, jam, like, I can't move. I grabbed like a stick and then I was like taking mud off this so I could, but then I was like, this is going to take me all night. So I started taking my hand and I was covered in mud. My chain was covered, like everything. And then it was like dark, so you can't see much. And then I was really annoyed because some people were like passing by and I was like, how can they ride? And my bag is jammed up. Like, I had a bit, not bigger tire, but my bike was a mountain bike, not necessarily a bike packing bike. So I needed smaller tires. I needed more clearance. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I got to Fernie like 2 hours later. I was so bummed. The thing is, I had ate so much. I remember like feeling like I wanted to throw up because I had so much food and also needing food. So I was like, I'm bunked and I want to throw up at the same time. Just it was, and then, but Fernie was like 10K to go. And then it took me 2 hours to get out of that 1 mile of mud, trying to lift my bike. And then got to Fernie, covered in mud. This is the whole side, like wiped everything. And then I was so slow at the gas station. I think it took me 45 minutes at the gas station, just being a mess and deciding like, what do I do? And then these guys came and they were taking a hotel room. So we agreed to share. So this guy made he called the hotel, booked, and then got to the hotel. There's nobody. I think we waited 20 minutes and like we were going to sleep in the freaking lobby of the hotel. It's like, so then that took 2 hours and a half of getting into Fernie and going to bed. I was like, I didn't realize how, like, because all these things adds up. So in the beginning, I was like, oh, don't worry. But I should have worried because these things adds up. And so like first night, I think we went to bed at like 4, and I went to bed at 4 in the morning. Get up at 8, I'm a zombie. And I think I was back on my bike at 10, just because it took me forever to.
Right.
Like, you think that sleeping is like you fall asleep and you wake up. But no, there's a lot of packing all your things. Like, I could have had a bit more room. Like, everything was packed pretty tight. And so it makes the packing like.
Yeah.
A bit more difficult. And so the second night, we made it to, I say we, because in the beginning there was a lot of people everywhere. So it felt like this fondo. And so we crossed the border, make it to Eureka. And then I was surrounded by like the faster guys were ahead. So I was surrounded with these like fast guys that are not fully racing. Mm-hmm. But I was racing. And so I was like, I'm in there, they're just chatting around and I want to go. So we got there at the gas station like midnight or something. And then I was like, I'm heading out. I thought it was a paved road from what I remember. And from like the ride with GPS, I was like, oh, I can like, I thought I remembered that I had camped at this spot. So I think that's going to be like a 2 hour. So I'm going to do another 2 hours. And so all the guys stay there to sleep. I'm like, yes, ciao. See you never.
See you never.
that was so funny because, yeah, when you like, there's a lot of like leapfrogging. So there's some people that you keep seeing for a little bit of time. And every time, like I was hoping it was the last time I see them just to,
right?
to be ahead. And yeah. So I get on this road and then pavement turns to dirt. And then, you know, the guy at the gas station. So I'm buying like I'm filling up with everything, trying to be fast.
No, hold on. I mean, I'm sorry to interrupt, but you're filling up at a gas station. I understand that but what does that mean? Because when I go to a gas station, I'm thinking like there's ho-hos and Doritos and there's like beef jerky. But like, what can you get at the gas station that's actually going to keep you going?
It's always a surprise because some gas station has more stuff. Sandwiches.
Oh, okay.
Like some gas station had plant-based protein shake. I love that because I can do dairy, but that was rare. Boiled eggs, cheese stick.
Okay. So you can get real food there, right? It's
not yeah. Like after the first day it was real food. I mean apart from the Snickers, but Snickers is real food, right?
Yeah.
In my Snickers book, and Coke. That's yeah. Like a staple, like every day, at least one or two, you know? And like a lot of gas stations have these tornadoes or like these like hot things on the grill. That was okay. Always like, I mean, I don't know if that's real food, but
yeah,
that's right. Not a, you know, a bar. So like pile up the food and then the guy at the cashier was like, hey, be safe out there. And then I was like, what does he mean? Like, he said it like, what do you mean? I was like, and then he added wildlife is,
Oh no.
Oh
and,
no.
And he just kind of said that. And so, but in my memory, that next stretch was like nothing. And so I was like, okay, well, like maybe he's just like trying, I don't know, maybe he says that to everybody or something.
Yeah.
So like pavement turns to dirt. It's like 1:30 in the morning or it's getting like 2. And then it's like the forest, like, and not too big of a road. I was like, ah, interesting. I didn't remember that. I didn't think it was like.
Right.
And then I see a set of eyes kind of in the road. And then like the eyes kind of goes in the side of the road. So I'm like, okay, this animal didn't want to be in my way. So okay. But like this, they were quite, you know, it was not a little cat. It was not a deer either. So I just saw the eyes and like I could still see the eyes on the side of the road. I went by and I didn't want to turn my head because I had my headlamp. So I was like, I don't even want to see what animal this is.
Yeah.
And I don't want to kind of like confront him or, you know, surprise him with my headlamp or anything. So I just like kind of kept straight. But like I did this with my eyes, like just look my head straight, but like looking on the side. Like he was staring at like we made like kind of this eye contact, but and then in front of me, like ahead in the middle of the road, another set of eyes, the same eyes, but this time like he kind of goes a bit, he was a bit further, so he's also moving to the side of the road slowly. And then I was like, what is, like, I'm trying to see in the dark. And as I get closer, his body starts to, I was like, is this a goat? It was a mountain lion. It was a huge mountain lion. So I saw him like going up, like it was like this, not a cliff, but like this kind of wall of rocks or whatever. So I like, he was walking like a big jet, like, you know, like they walk.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. I was like, I am just witness. I'm just seeing a mountain lion right now. And he's going in the forest. So that's great. Like, it's no confrontation feeling, you know. So I can't just like break or turn around. Like, I have to keep going. But like, this guy is like 20 meters, like 30 meters. And then he kind of just stopped behind a tree, but I can still see his full body. And like, he just looks at me like as if he was like hidden. But like, and I did the same thing. Like, I didn't want to turn my head, but like, oh my goodness. I was like, this is the same animal that I just saw right there, like 2 meters from me.
Wow.
Oh my goodness. And so it's like 2 in the morning. And I thought I was going to camp around that time, but I was like, I am not. I am getting the hell out of here.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that I was entering this long stretch of. So that's what the guy meant by wildlife.
Yeah. Wow.
Like, and so then I kind of look on my app, and like every time I stopped, I was so nervous because when I'm moving, I have my big headlight in front of my bike and my rear light like flashing. I feel like I kind of look like a car or something for animals, you know.
Yeah.
But when I stop, my light stops. So I feel like I'm just so like vulnerable.
Vulnerable, yeah.
Oh my goodness. So then like I look on my ad, like while riding, I was like, okay, there's a cabin over there. I try to make the math. Okay, maybe I'll be there about like 4 in the morning. I got there at like 6:30. So I rode all night. And then the cabin, I don't know why this was on my app, but this cabin was locked. It was like not even, it was some place that you can rent. But then I was like, so I slept on the porch of that cabin.
Well,
but then like by 7:30, like cars started passing. And so like I woke up and like I couldn't fall asleep. And then I heard like the sound of a bike. I was like, oh, I need to get going. So then like, and I feel like from there, like I could never. So you said, what's your typical day? Every day was different.
Okay. How about this? What was the most sleep that you got in a single night? Maybe that's a better way because we're all trying to like
get
5 hours. Okay, so that's
I had two or three 5 hours, but I don't think I feel like I averaged 2 or 3 hours a night because I did a lot of little naps, which was not very productive. But in the moment, it's like, oh, or sometimes it was not even, I couldn't control it. I feel like, you know, we have different part of our brain and, you know, what's hard in cycling, what I find difficult is when you have this battle in your brain of like, one wants to stop and the other one wants to keep pushing. And you have this, like, you have to like push through. That's like difficult. But I feel like my push through guy was sleeping. So then I only had the other guy. So then like I would unconsciously like unclip and just kind of like I woke up with my face on the dirt with like my butt.
Really?
I just fell asleep. Yeah. And it's like I didn't have any control of that because my brain was sleeping. And so that's the part that I thought I didn't expect to happen because I had never experienced this. And so, but then I would wake up and get back on my bike. So then I don't even know. I lost track of how much sleep I was getting. It was not structured. I felt like so disorganized.
Did you ever nod off on the bike? because I've actually had that happen before when I was
just
nod off while writing. Catch yourself, oh man, I was just asleep right there.
And then, oh man, once I was descending this big descent.
Oh my gosh.
And I opened my eyes. There was this curve, like this 180. I was going right off the cliff. Opened my eyes. I swear, I was like, what are you doing? Like where's the thing is, my judgment was sleeping. And that's interesting because I have a lot of fear riding mountain bike. There was and I remember this section, it was very difficult to keep my balance and I was not making a lot of progress. So then I was like, maybe I'll just have a 10 minute nap just because, I can't do this. And so 10 minute nap and then 200 meter later, I can't do this. So and then I did a 20 minute nap and then same thing. And then I had a 1 hour. This was so stupid. I had a 1 hour nap and then I wake up at midnight and then I'm like, I can't spend the night here. I'm going to run out of water because I didn't expect this stretch. Another miscalculation. I was like, I'm going to have to ride this section either tomorrow in the heat or right now in the night. So suddenly I was filled with adrenaline or I need to get out of here because this section is going to get on my bike. But then I was so zummy. This is in New Mexico. I'm my brain is gone, left me in Wyoming. And I get on my bike and I remember feeling my legs pushing the pedal and my hand holding to the bar, but my eyes, I couldn't see proper. I couldn't process the information. I was but I just went straight in a straight line. And it's almost like I was too zombie to feel the fear or to analyze the danger or the risk. I just went straight line through anything. My bike was, and my bike is so much more capable than what I think as a roadie, a mountain bike is capable. I just always feel like, oh, maybe this rock is going to throw me off, but no, I can take it,
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just remember feeling wow, I'm just climbing. I felt like I was dreaming, but I was also feeling my legs pushing. So I was like, this, and even I went downhill and I was like, you're not even aware. You can't even see. What are you doing? But I was like, da 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 da. It's almost I didn't crash, but it was this confidence from not over analyzing, not looking at all of the rocks, not feeling the fear. Just I was kind of, I would have 1 foot on clip or sometimes my 2 feet on clip, just kind of in case, and just bam, bam, just smashing the pedals. And it worked. And I was why can I can I do this when I have all of my brain, or why do I need to be zombie to ride so well?
Yeah.
So yeah,
but maybe your perception of how well you were riding could be affected by the zombiness too.
Yeah, you know? I mean, because that same section I couldn't ride it. Maybe it's because I slept that I had this energy of but honestly, I remember my legs pushing and my eyes not seeing what was just I could feel the rocks with my hand on the handlebar, but I couldn't see it.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I mean, I kind of couldn't see but it, I couldn't see where to go. I just went straight line. And I remember somebody tell me that when you can't see the line, you just go straight. But I don't think that's what they meant. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, yeah. With all the sleep deprivation, did you have any hallucinations? I have a couple of friends that have done some stuff and they've actually had a tree was talking to him. And it followed him along the trail. It was strange the way he described it, Did you have anything like that?
That too, but I didn't. I think the only thing is when it's dark, the side of the road, there's some shades that kind of change as your light moves, So the shade kind of moves. So it's always like, oh, is this an animal? No, that's a rock. But that's not fascinating. But the wildest thing is there was this section in New Mexico that was new to me because last year there was forest fire. So there was like a section that I didn't ride. And it was at night. And for some reason, I decided to sleep. This time it was not a conscious decision. But
because it's night? Jeez.
Yeah. I mean, and I woke up and I was like, where am I? What am I doing? Like, I'm in the ditch. I was like, what's going on? What's happening? Why am I here? What am I doing? And then a cyclist go by. I can't even remember if he had like bags on, if it like, just remember like a face and a helmet being like, hi. And I got on my bike and I was like, where am I going? I can't remember what I'm doing. What am I doing? And as if like I had a surgery, and you know, when you wake up from surgery, from having a, from the you're drugs. Like all kind of, you know, lost. Or yeah. Sometimes you might experience this sometimes waking up, but that lasts like, let's say you wake up in a different hotel room and you don't remember. And then you have like a moment of, which city am I? You know?
Yeah.
Because you travel. But it lasts like 2 minutes and then you remember. But this was like, I think it was like 15, 20 minute of like, I can't remember where I'm going.
Wow.
And I'm going on this road because I kind of, I know, I don't know. I'm going in the same direction, but the cyclist went. But you know, when Lyle was recounting in one of her stories that one guy kind of started riding their other direction, I could have totally do that because I, you know,
right.
The only, like I slept on the side of the road that I was going, so that's probably why. But if I had slept on the other side, I might have, you know,
turned around and gone the wrong way.
Gone the wrong way, because
yeah.
And my Garmin was still on with the map on. So then, like, I was kind of following this line. But, like, it took a while before, oh, yeah, I'm doing the Tour Divide. I'm trying to get to the border. Oh, yeah, that's what I'm doing. Like, that was the wildest. Like, oh, man, I went really far.
Yeah.
So
I never thought, yeah.
You mentioned that cyclist there. There was, you said a while back, there was a time in which you were leapfrogging people. Did it always, was it always contact with somebody else, or were there long days or stretches that you didn't see anyone? I mean, it's just, to me, it would be reassuring if you knew that periodically you were going to see people and motivating, I guess. But if, I don't know, a couple of days without seeing other people, I don't know how I'd feel.
Yeah, it's so funny because when I done it last year, I don't even know how I had the courage to do it, because it was a million times safer doing it in the race because there's people everywhere. You just know that, you know, anything happens serious. Let's say, you know, you knock your head, you're you know,
someone's gonna come by.
There was definitely more, I mean, not even leapfrogging. There was like rider in sight, you know, kind of everywhere in the first, well, 2 days until I kind of made that jump. And then I was in no man's land a little. But yeah, there was a few guys that kept catching up to me. And I was always annoyed because I wanted to go further. And I was like, am I going to see them again? And then, they come again. And they were sleeping like full nights. So I was really annoyed that they were able to do that. But like, that's, you know, that's they're just like faster. So they could afford to sleep in the, yeah. So it was definitely safer to know that there's, and then you get in town and then you see some people. And then there was also people coming north at some point when we get to the basin. It was funny because then I started seeing more people going north than people passing me. So yeah, definitely safer, but definitely lonelier from the basin and after.
You just said something that was very interesting. I mean, like, if you were going to do it again, right? And I'm, I, what you just said, I actually made a note here. like lessons learned? And do you think, you know, first time out, you probably, you've said, yeah, I made a miscalculation. Do you think if you were doing it again, you might be a little bit more disciplined to say what those guys did, like every night, just stop, get 4 hours of sleep or get 5 hours of sleep and then go on. Don't try to push through that. Like if you're saying these guys were doing that, right?
Yeah.
Could you do?
I mean, in the end, I was faster.
So apart from screw those guys, I was faster.
Like definitely not sleeping 8 hours, that's for sure. Yeah. But for sure, I have this long list of things that I would do differently. And and I'm surprised, because I thought everything was like dialed. I thought I knew was I would not. I mean, I of course it was a first experience, but you know, and I, what's also interesting is that I learned that, you know, when you do stage race, you can learn something from stage one and stage two. And sometimes you can get better as the stage race go. Like I've, the longest, I guess I've done is 7 day stage race. So, but the Tour Divide, it was a decline. So let's say I was able to ride through the night on day two, with the adrenaline of the mountain lions. And I never fell asleep that night. I was going.
Right.
And, but then on day 14, you can't do what you've done on day four because it, like the distance. So let's say I would calculate based on what, on day four, I was able to do that amount with that amount of food. So therefore, now I can like do the same, or like I had too much food when I did this, so now I'm just gonna bring that. No. You can't. It doesn't compare. It's not.
Is that because your body's in decline, or because the terrain is just different, or just your body's just
terrain is different. And then I kept falling asleep from midnight. I was just this was a nightmare, and I didn't have. Because what happened is from the basin, we started to have big headwind during the day. This was madness. It was horrible. But at night, it was fine. It was like, it was warm and no wind. So the best strategy would have been to actually flip it and to ride at night. But I didn't have the discipline to stop, to have a full rest during the day to then ride at night. I was pushing in the headwind and then fall asleep at midnight, and then ended up sleeping, waking up at 5 a.m. and then, oh shit, here's the night go. Like,
right.
And then pushing through, and then, and then you're too tired to, keep pushing. You're like, I don't want, I need to get going. And,
Well, you know, last time you were on, you started something that we've been talking about on all the podcasts since, with the data, right? Not knowing the data, making a choice to not look at the data and not know the data. And so I was curious how that played into it. I know you were watching the dots, so that is data in a way, but were you looking at your power and all that stuff too? Or were you just...
You are making a great point. I think things went sideways when I started looking at the freaking tracker.
Yep.
I started not doing my own race. Mm-hmm. I started chasing. And that's when I lost, you know, and that's actually my biggest takeaway is if I was going to do it next year, it should have been a time trial. The fastest way to get to the finish line, you know, it is just doing my best race. And I was kind of in control until I was like, I need to press the gas. Like, I can't be eight. This is impossible. And also, I guess I didn't expect, like, this was the first time that there was so many women on the start line. It was like, there was a handful of women who've done it under 20 days. So I thought I was doing amazing. I was like, this is incredible. PB on day one, PB on day two. Like, just saw two mountain lions, a grizzly. I'm riding through the night. I like, this is incredible. And then, oh, damn it. I'm like seventh. What's going on? Like, like, it was funny because I was proud of myself. And so it was kind of a game of like, I didn't feel like it didn't, I was aware that I was writing amazing, and I was writing some sections that I was walking that like last year. So I was like, this is great. So I didn't feel like I was slow or anything, but then I just, wanted to be on the podium. And that's when things.
Yeah, you
sideways. So I just have to say, I don't want to get off that topic, but I think it is related. I appreciate Mike bringing it up. I can't thank you enough for that book. How Bad Do You Want It? Now, admittedly, I'm only on chapter 4. But number one, the data. Since doing that, but I have my computer on, but I never have my miles per hour. I just don't look at it. The only thing that I'm right. And it's just freed my mind.
Fun, eh?
Yeah, it's freed my mind. And then, I think about, I'm listening to what you said, like the brain, the push on brain versus the go to sleep brain, and how many tricks I'm using from that, reading that book to say like, okay, my legs are about to give up. I can only imagine that was probably happening like every 30 minutes with you out there.
Yeah. And it's funny. I remember noticing that I was really bothered. What was bothering me? Oh yeah. So in the first few days, in the first week, my throat, I felt like it was really inflamed every time I swallow anything. So I felt like I was limited by, so every time I eat something, it was painful, just like here. And I remember like hearing myself talk about how annoyed this was. Oh, I'm limited by this, and this is painful. Da, da, da. And then I was like, this is going to be painful, but it's not, killing me. So I kind of immediately changed my perspective on like, that's just how it's going to be. Like,
hard,
in a couple
hard
days,
to fuck up.
Off,
harden the fuck so up just, and just ride. Yeah.
Ignore it. Like, and so when your legs are, they want, like, this is how it's going to be. So just, let it be.
I'm
being angry about it or you wanting to. It's hard, but like, I remember doing like that shift of like, oh yeah, like stop worrying because that's just draining you.
Well, I've been
brilliant.
The thing I've been wrestling with is from the very beginning when you're riding into Fernie, you run into this mud bog, and dealing. If you've been riding in off road, there's been times where you've gone out in the wet and your bike gets all packed up, but we're riding like normal bikes, and it's completely defeating trying to get with a stick and get all the mud off. But you're at the end of the day, you're riding a 25 pound mountain bike. You're dealing with 60 pounds maybe, and then packed with mud. And like, I don't know. I'd be like, check, please. I think I'm done. This is day two. And I don't know if I would do that, but it's like, I just trying to imagine putting myself in your shoes in that situation in the dark, just trying to get to this hotel. You're tired. You got the mud. I mean, that just seemed like, was that the biggest hurdle, or was it later on when the fatigue really set in and you were just super tired and just trying to push through that stuff?
It's funny. I have the feeling that nothing was hard, which is kind of hilarious.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, again, in cycling, my definition of what's hard is when I'm like, you compare like a race to training. Sometimes, like, what's hard is when you're in training and you want to stop, but you have to do it. On the Tour Divide, it didn't really occur. And that's what's amazing with these, I was committed to do it. And once you're committed, like, This is impossible to do without the race. I could have never overcome this. But when you're committed to do something, it never, ever, ever crossed my mind to quit. It was not there. So it was not hard, like mentally. I never had to deal with this desire of quitting. It never occurred. And to me, in cycling, that's what I find the hardest, because I did some race that I found irrelevant, that don't suit me. I'm not going to get anything out of it. You know, in there's some races that you just want to pull out of it. You just want to crash and be out of it. But everything made sense. I was in alignment with, you know, me wanting to do it. And so that's why it wasn't like hard in a way.
I'm crossing that off my list of questions, because I am totally blown away that there was no point at which you said, and that's, I'm so impressed by that. I've told everyone this. I just did the Lost and Found Gravel Grinder, and it's 100 miles, right? And like, but somewhere between mile 46 and mile 50, I was like, well, I could just tell people I had stomach problems, or I could just tell people I'd have a mechanical, and I was ready to throw it in. I was just done.
There's something in your why, or like why you're doing it and how much you wanted to do it. Like, I think if this was, maybe it wasn't that big of a deal to complete that race for you. Like, I think if it was, you have trained for this, you know, if it was really meaningful, you wouldn't. Like, because what you just said, I could just tell this. Yeah, but what are you going to tell yourself, you know?
Oh, I would have never been able to live with myself after. I would have regretted it for the rest of my life.
Yeah, sure. You can't live with the...
Yeah, but it did enter my mind, but yeah.
When the story is, when you really want to do it, and then it just...
Yeah.
I think the only... And it's funny because, so I ended up being in funny, because I don't know if you've watched a little reel that I posted before the race. I wrote this like, I think in February, because somebody asked me why I wanted to do the Tour Divide, and I was inspired. I wrote this little poetry, I'd call it, on hardship. And at the end of this reel, it was like I wrote a text, and then basically it was like a voiceover. Mm-hmm. And at the end of this text, I said, what I need isn't to reach a goal, it's to chase one. And this is like in life, whatever you accomplish, like it's not like what makes you get up in the morning, what makes you excited, you know, it's the chasing after something, you know, this is what life is about. I want to build this company. I want to you know, these accomplishments, everybody accomplished, like who cares about this stuff? What you need to be like, you know, the best brilliant person is to have something to chase. And to me, that's what the Tour Divide was. After racing so much, I felt like the Tour Divide was giving me something to go after. Yeah. But I never, and then during the Tour Divide, I found myself in this chasing position, and I thought it was hilarious because and it got me, like, it was so funny, because every day I thought I was going to catch them. I was like, today I'm going to get them. I was this hopeful. When you have a goal, like when you have something to chase, I had hope that I was going to get them. And I was like, I was going, I'm going to go. And I think it's only when I got to Pi Town that I was like, I think I'm not going to catch them. Like, that's the first time that I lost hope. Like, I've been in the same position the whole time. Right. Never lost hope. I'm going to get them. Today, I'm going to get them. And then my sister would text me, today, you're going to get them. Like, I'm going to, you know.
So did the dots help, or did they screw up the plan?
Well, both.
Uh-huh, right.
It's funny. Like, I would be out of service and trying to make a plan. Okay, you know what? I'm going to get to Pinedale. I should change my tire. I'm going to get some food at a restaurant, and I'm sleeping 4 hours. I need to reset. And then I'm like, do this. I get to Pinedale. The girls are still going. And then I get going, and then I fall asleep in the ditch. And like, it's like, I did everything.
Yeah. But then, took you off your plan.
I mean, I think both, like, it would be interesting to compare both strategy. They might end up being very similar in the end.
Right.
But, you know, actually, I have a really good comparison. Nationals 2019, time trial. I know the course really well. Nobody knows me because it's the first time I have a time trial bike. And I surprised everybody with my third place. But I started, I don't know, 15th to... like in the middle of the pack. I was like not placed as a favorite, and so I guess I passed some people, and it was very, I remember this time trial was perfect execution, in control, aware, you know, everything perfect, and I get third place by half a second or something in front of this Olympian, and everybody's surprised. And so the following year, I think was one of them retired. Anyway, I end up starting in the first, like last position, like favorite. Mm-hmm. And really my biggest threat is Allison Jackson, and she's in front of me. She's second to last. It's the same course. It's so funny that year because of the pandemic, it was the same course. Same bike, same power meter. I know that, like, and all I had to do, which that's the wrong answer, but all I had to do was close that gap. Like, I just need to be tiny.
Yeah.
Just 1 second closer to be national champion, basically. Well, in my head, I mean, it could have been somebody else, but in my head, and that was very wrong, because that's not how you do a time trial. And I should have known better, but this was a learning experience. It was my first time starting as a favorite. And I went off the gate, and it was like, I just need to close that gap. And I had my eyes on her instead of doing my best time trial. And so I started too fast, and I just... I was feeling like I was drowning, like I didn't have enough, like I was just trying to breathe, panicking, because I was sensed that the gap was just getting bigger. And so I like panicking. So I'm trying to. And I finished with the exact same time as the previous year, with the exact same average power, but wow. It was the worst nightmare ever. And then I came second. I lost to AJ, but I got second, and last year I was third, and amazing. This was perfect. Da, 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 da. Same kind of results, or even like better outcome results, but like I was drowning, and everything went. So if we compare, like, did the dot help? Or I feel like I've done the same mistake. But if I did, like, a controlled time trial, maybe it would be the same outcome, just a very different experience.
Right.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't know. Mm. You brought up Allison Jackson, and I have a question, right? So at one point you're, you know, she's a staunch competitor of yours. And then you see her, she won the Roubaix. As a competitor of hers, do you take joy in that type of victory for someone that you're so, you know, competitive with? Or do you feel like, oh, that could have been me maybe? What are the emotions around that?
Well, I was so proud of AJ when she went Paris, but that's different because obviously I wasn't there, and
Sure.
obviously I've stopped. I think when like in that time trial or in a race, because AJ, we've been like I came, I sh she beat it more often than I beated her. Like you want to win, you want to be faster than that person.
Of course.
But I'm definitely I'm really proud of when Canadians do amazing things on the world tour.
Yeah.
I couldn't, when I saw she went Paris-Roubaix, I could, like, I mean, I could believe it. Like she's a great bike rider.
Yeah.
She's a great competitor. Yeah, it was amazing. No, I yeah, really excited and happy for her successes. And it, I don't think it could have been me. Like I don't, I don't think, oh, it could have been me. No, she's kind of up
She
there.
deserves it. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think I could have won that time trial if I did better.
Yes.
Oh, that's
Yeah.
I mean, also there was a gap in equipment. I think she was really well geared up
Yeah.
because I had beaten her in the time trial the previous year, so that's why I came from this expectation of like I'm gonna close that gap.
Sure.
But then
All right.
she
Well, okay. So we're getting kind of close here. We should probably get wrap it up soon, but I want to know, so going into this, right, you went for, Olympic hopeful road racer, right? And then I'm going to take a left turn. I'm going to go do this bike packing.
Yeah.
Where's your head at right now? Is there another tour divide in you, or are you going to get back on the road and still try to make another run at the Olympics, or both?
I don't know. The last few weeks, like there was such a build, like a preparation, everything. And then due to tour divide, and then I'm still in Colorado. I thought I was going to be driving back home, and then my friends were like, "Oh, you can stay. Like, they're there for vacation. Do you want to keep the house?" So I was like, "You know what? This is good to kind of get my head around things and life." And I feel like I haven't been progressing very much in my. I think I'm also, I think, in a good place. Like, I felt really happy after doing a tour divide. Like, this was amazing. And I feel like 50-50 between I could improve all of this if I change this, if I did that, and then there's also like there's so many things to do, and it's really just for me doing the thing is there was more coverage than I thought. There was a big buzz around the Tour Divide, and so it's easy to be caught into this little buzz, but then at the end of the day, it's like what do you want to do? And so I'm asking that question, and it's like, well, I'm also really broke. It's kind of expensive to do the tour. It's really expensive.
Yeah, I can
Yeah,
imagine.
so it's like if I was fully sponsored and like then most likely yes, I would do it again.
Yeah.
But then it's like it's also the cost of opportunity. Like if I take you freaking, anything.
Right.
So I'm also I don't know.
Yeah.
Surprise, I need more time. So I just started this not-for-profit last year. It's called the Women's Ride, womensride.ca, women WOMENS ride.ca. It's indoor cycling. Because indoor cycling has been part of what I've in Canada especially.
Yeah.
And so I was like, what can I do that would be like useful, like purposeful? Because trying to go for a win, I think I'm done with that. I lost. It doesn't make sense anymore. This putting so much effort and energy trying to get a result for myself. What does it do? And so I started doing on YouTube these guided workouts for women, indoor site, like structured workout. And I ended up, I didn't know that I had all of this knowledge. And obviously I have this passion for cycling, not just for cycling, but for pushing myself. I think there's a lot of empowerment and confidence that you can work through. So it's not necessarily just for cyclists, but for anyone who wants to be active, try to get into some kind of fitness. All you need is a bike. And then I got you through this workout. And I've received so much feedback last year. It blew me away. I didn't realize how, like, somebody told me how much it changed their life. And I was like, how? But it's true. Like, it's not for everybody to. And so that was easy. It was like, just get on the bike with me. And then I you know, we do workout together. And the fact that it was like, it was live. So don't be late, you know, because then it's over. And but I didn't want this to turn into like a coaching business or a fitness, because I was like, this is plenty of that. And what I wanted to do with this was to active to learn how the basic of training, of structure, and inspire them to push their limit, you know. And I say, like, it was like softly pushing. Sometimes I would have like an optional interval, or, you know, so it's like, you know, don't feel bad if you don't want to do it, but like, more often than not, people would do it. And then I had like prize anyway. So this project last year was so successful that I was like, I filed a not-for-profit, and I'm trying to find sponsors to help me like keep it going so that it could be like free for people to join on YouTube. And so that project really excites me. And so I there's many things that I want to do. I want to talk with the Federation in Quebec to have more opportunity for women to try cycling, because I realize there's a lot of like this confidence barrier everywhere. So there's a lot of things that I want to do that don't really involve, you know, trying to go for a win or training. So I don't know if, you know, I think I'll put my energy towards that.
Well, I did watch one of the videos with these women that are doing the
workout
course. Yeah. And it's, I can't imagine what that must feel like, getting that kind of feedback from everybody, you know, because I mean, you've really changed a lot of these people's lives. They're not just their fitness, but it's like their approach to life, you know, and it's like so much more than just, yeah, I'm getting on the bike and a trainer with this person that's a pro. It's like, you're showing them, it's like you open a door for them. And that's gotta be so satisfying, especially with the career you've had. And then to now be inspiring others.
Yeah. Like I would get message, and to me, it's weird because I've always been like very driven. So anything that's difficult, I'm not afraid to try, you know, and whatever.
Obviously.
But, but it's not, you know, it's not for everybody. And like some women would be like, I never thought I could do this, but like you gave me an opportunity to, you know, to try. And, you know, it's kind of, it sounds kind of crazy. Yeah. It's like, obviously you can. Obviously you can get on the bike and do your best, but like they, you know?
Yeah.
And then they were like, oh, I'm not going to do the optional sprint at the end, but then they did it. And then they're so proud of themselves. And it's, and then like, maybe they'll join like the group ride with the guys, and you know, to read that feedback, I was like, oh my goodness. Yeah.
All right. If somebody wants to help with your foundation, if there's a listener in our audience that's like, wow, I want to be part of this, how would they do it?
So you go to womensride.ca, womens ride.ca. There's an English version. I think the default is like French, and so my class are in French and English. So you get a French course or an English course. I mean, it's really easy. It's like 30 seconds, you know, and on the screen, you have all of the numbers for the workout. So it's really easy to follow. You don't need any numbers. We use perceived effort, kind of like a structured spinning class, kind of like this Peloton. Mm-hmm.
If you don't mind saying, yeah.
And with a group of women, and it's so it's probably I'm probably gonna start again in October, so it's not gonna be like now. I mean, it's still nice out, so go right outside.
Yeah.
And then when it's indoor cycling, so maybe from October we'll get started again then.
Well,
and
Maria,
if there's potential like sponsors out there, like I would like this to be free so that you know we open the door. Then door is open.
Yeah. Well, bless you for turning that your experiences and your energy into something that's good for, you know, getting people on bike. That's I mean, it's in part what our podcast is about. It's about what we were doing, you know, when we ride. It's just thank you. So we'll get the word out. We'll do our best to get the word out.
Yeah,
thank you.
Marie, thank you so much for coming on again. And you're such an inspiration. I love your full heart, full gas. What a great message. And it's so apropos to your general spirit. So congrats on a tremendous finish. I know you had your heart set on the podium, but eighth place, first time out. It's incredible. 19 days, you beat 20 days. I mean, there's... It's
31st overall.
I just marvel at it. Yeah. So congratulations. And
thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I hope, I don't know if it inspired anybody to try.
I don't know how many people are going to go do the Tour Divide, but just the I'm sure you've inspired people in so many ways. Anyone that listens gotta, you know,
and you know,
takeaway.
What I wanted to say, it like has not awful, but like it was hard, obviously. But like I came back and I was like, I feel like I can do anything, you know.
Yeah.
Like I think when you do something really outside of your what you think you're capable, like it just opens door. And so I think the message to get out of that is not to be afraid of trying something that seems impossible on paper. And you might be surprised like what you're able to do. And then the reward is like, it's these new doors, like, oh, now I can do all of this. Now I could like sign up to like pretty much any race. Or so then I just went and I climbed Mount Evans on 14,000 feet. And like, I never thought I would have never think of doing this, but like, oh, a 12-hour ride, you know, like I could probably do it. And then I did it. And it's like, and so that's why I think it's important to challenge yourself, to push yourself. And you might be surprised what you find. And it's going to open doors to explore like new limits.
When I was a kid, we used to spend my family lived up, my grandmother lived in ravine. It's one of these things that when there's snow on it, people, there's no ski resort there. There's, you just hike up and you ski down. And I'll never forget a quote one time from a guy that said, once you skied Tuckerman's Ravine, the rest of life is a piece of cake, you know? So, and I take that, like what you said, you set a goal, you made this accomplishment. I can now go do anything. Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so,
yeah.
Yeah. And that's hopefully a message that a lot of people walk away with. Set a big goal, accomplish it, and then the rest of life is a piece of cake, right? So
yeah. Well, we'll see if the rest. But well, hopefully it'd make it easier.
If you want to follow along with Marie on Instagram, it's MSOLEILBLAIS 74, and you know, give her a follow, be inspired, give your full heart, give full gas all the time. So I don't, my internet, it keeps cutting out. I don't know what's going on. Did I cut out on you just then?
Yeah, it's been cutting a little. I've been missing some words, but
we're going to have a system upgrade here, I think, in the garage.
Yeah. Well, thanks guys. Thanks for having me. It was great chatting about Tour Divide.
Definitely. Yeah. Okay. Well,
congratulations. And thank you so much for coming back.
Yeah, as we wrap up, we want to remind you, if you like what we're doing, please give us a nice review on Apple or whatever your streaming platform is. There's an opportunity to subscribe at cyclejerkspodcast.buzzsprout.com. And thank you all so much for listening. Thank you, Marie. Truly inspiring. And hopefully we'll maybe have you back on with your next adventure.
Yeah, peace. Awesome.
All right.
Okay.
Cheers.
Enjoy Colorado. We'll see you soon.